just a bloke in a bar.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Bloke in a Bar. And I tell you what, I was going to say it's a good day, but it might be a tough day for my guest here, Big Georgie Rose. Brother, how you going?
Oh, it has. It has been a tough day. It's been a testing day, but it's all part of the excitement and the fun. And I'm grateful to be here with you. It's been a while.
It has, mate. It's been a very long time. Now, walk us through, because like obviously a lot of footy fans listen to this podcast, but just the impact, and obviously, you know, it's out by now. Thurman has pulled out of the fight due to an arm or a bicep injury. What is the impact of that? Because as a consumer, like even, you know, when I was speaking to the people at KO, even I don't think about all the marketing stuff, all the work that's been done, everything that's been shot. What is the impact of a fighter pulling out of such a big card? Not a little card, a huge card.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a $10 million decision, you know. It's a very painful one. Mm. To put together these big fights, particularly the Tim Zhu fights, it's 3+ months of planning, of intense planning that goes into it. So, and now at this point, 2 weeks out from a fight, that's where everything ramps up to. So the promotion side of it, the marketing, every campaign plan that's been shot. We even had, a heap of people shooting stuff with Tim before he went over to the States that we're holding on to be able to release over time. And so all of that just goes straight into the trash, and we have to start from scratch. And it's good though; it keeps me on my toes. You know, we've got to turn everything around really quick. We've got a whole new narrative. We've got a whole new opponent. A whole new everything. So right now, I'm talking to you right now, but I'm also ticking things over in my head about what I've got to do for the rest of the day and what we've got to get done. So But it's a cool headache too. At the end of the day, we get to, you know, watch Tim Zhu fight for a unification in Vegas in 12 days' time. So as bad as it is, there's a really cool reward at the end.
Well, put it this way. From a boxing, and I wouldn't say I was a casual fan, but obviously I'm not as good as a boxing purist, obviously. But you take the Thurman name out of it and you put in the name Fundora. A lot of people, maybe the wider audience, don't realise this. This kid, before his last loss, which was one of the biggest shocks in boxing at the time, was the next big thing. And not just in this weight division. We're talking in boxing, period.
Yeah.
Unique frame of 6'6" in the weight division that, you know, the tallest you'd probably be is a six. If you're 6'1", 6'2", that's tall.
Yeah.
He's 6'6". He lost to Mendoza in a shock decision, only had one loss. And there's an argument to be made from a pure boxing perspective. This is a tougher challenge for Timmy Zhu. And that's not hyperbolic. Genuinely, southpaw, 6'6", also only had one loss and is super young and has been relatively active.
Yeah, and like you said, shock loss too. Absolute shock loss. He was winning that fight up until, you know, the ninth round or whatever and when he got stopped. But this is a guy that... when we were looking at the division early on, and you look at your path, like when you've got your fighter, you look at what's the best path to the top, because everybody wants to win a world title. What's the best way to get there? And you see this guy, Fundora. Fundora was campaigning in the WBC, and he was like you said, he's a freak of nature. He's how he makes the weight, I have no idea. Mm. Not only that, so he can. So we're probably about 1.5 meters away right now. He could jab you on the chin from here, and so you got to think like, how do I get him back from there?
Yeah,
he's an impossible opponent. And so when I saw him back then, I was like, man, this guy is an impossible opponent. He's a guy that I hope we don't run into until we're really ready for it. Mm. You know, you'd need a great training camp, great preparation, everything. And so he was that boogeyman that nobody wanted to go near. Mendoza finishes him in spectacular fashion in the biggest upset of the year. And suddenly, you know, people think that he's lost credibility. He's still that same dangerous fighter. Like, how do you prepare for a guy like that with a unique shape that there's nobody else out there that you can prepare with? I've been walking around all day looking for skinny blokes who look like they can fight and think we can get him to prepare Tim for the next... over the next 12 days. Graham,
are you free, brother? Can you stretch?
Yeah, no, he's in there. Sternum injury.
Oh, okay.
He's not available.
Mate, and also, what to make this even more exciting about this fight is there's an argument to be made. Mendoza versus Zhu, the first 6 round, if you're 4-2 definitely to Tim Zhu, you could make an argument for 3-3 in that first six round. Arguably his toughest battle.
Yeah.
And ironically, you look at Fandora, he won most of those rounds.
Yeah.
So it's not it's the level is so close at the moment when it comes to, I know, you know, styles make fights,
yep,
but this guy is right there on that level.
100%. And he was touted as the next guy. I remember when we went over to LA for the Castano Charlo fight, the rematch. And Tim was there with Fandora. They were both on the panel and they were both talking about, they were pushing their case for who was next. And Fandora's been that name over there, that he was the guy who was next. He's the guy who was coming for Charlo. He was the guy who was going to take all the belts and he was going to be the next superstar of the super welterweight division. Now, obviously that all changed and Tim's been skyrocketing in his performances since then. I mean, Tim's activity obviously helps him above a lot of these other guys because Tim's been able to prove himself against these really good opponents. And so Tim's gone on, won the belt. Now Fandora's in the position to win, you know, to win the WBC belt. And then because of everything that's happened now it's a unification. So there's two belts on the line.
Yeah.
And it's a huge opportunity for both of them. But Fandora has been that guy in the division for such a long time, and he's a dangerous guy. He's literally a guy that you need a 12-week camp for.
Mm.
You don't do this on 12 days. No. You need 12 weeks. Tim Zhu's about to do it on 12 days, and that's what's absolutely mind-blowing to me. Like, I know that Tim's got, you know, one of the great teams. I believe Igor is one of the best coaches in world boxing.
Mm.
And I know that he'll find the strategy, he'll find the plan that Tim needs to be able to get this win.
Mm.
But to do it on 12 days' notice, everybody is under pressure to get the job done. I mean, it's not an issue for Fandora because Fandora fights 6-foot guys all the time.
Mm.
You know, so there's no big change to what he's been sparring.
Well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So he's been preparing for these guys for all this time. And then whereas Tim didn't decide, hey, I'm going to go and get a 6-6, you know, straight up and down bloke here to Southport to come in and spar with, because there's nobody else like that. You'll never prepare for a fight like that until you have to.
And ironically, Thurman is also a very unorthodox fighter. So the camp Tim Zhu has done is for a 5'11", 5'10", you know, wide punches, a lot of hooks, a lot of combos, weird timing.
Yeah.
Whereas Fandora is orthodox in the sense that, you know, pretty straightforward, but the southpaw 6'6". On top of all that, for people that may not know, Fandora was already planned to fight on this card. So it's not like he's getting a 12-day notice. He's in camp, ready to go. He is about to peak and be ready for a fight. So, mate, I am, when it comes to this fight, I am just as excited to see the outcome, because it's not going to be what a lot of people think it's going to be, I think.
No, and it's a blessing and a curse. Like the fact that Fandora was on this card already, you know, it makes for the opportunity for him to step up into the main event straight away. But it's an absolute curse, because he's the boogeyman of the division. And it's such a hard fight to prepare for. One of Tim's big finishing sparring partners has been Brian Mendoza, who he just fought recently.
Yeah.
But he had a very similar style to Thurman that was going to help Tim to prepare for Thurman. And so now I feel like the conversations will change from, you know, preparing for that style to how the hell did you land on Fandora? You know, what's the key? So I guess that's a benefit in knowing that Mendoza's been in the ring with Fandora. They can have them conversations now, but it's not the same as actually physically being able to prepare for it and go through their motions.
Yeah, absolutely. And from Tim's perspective, it's a gutsy move, because if he goes over there and, you know, somehow loses to Thurman, a lot of people will go, look, Thurman's at the tippity top. He's fought, you know, he's beaten Garcia, he's beaten, you know, you name it, he's beaten him in the division. The only loss he's had against Manny Pacquiao, which was a split decision, very close. If he doesn't get dropped in the early in the fight, he probably wins that fight.
Yeah.
So a lot of people would go, okay, you know, Timmy's there or thereabouts, but he'll come back, he'll be sweet. If he loses to Fandora, all of a sudden it's like, oh, nah, it's all been hype. He's not on the world-class level.
Yeah. Look, the one mentality that I have is I never consider Tim Zhu losing, so I never think about them. That alternate world scenario, I believe Tim wins every day of the week. He beats anyone that steps into the ring with him. But like you say, Thurman was that name Thurman was that guy with the amazing resume, with the amazing mouth to back it up too. I mean, when we got to that press conference in LA and he stepped up to the mic, he absolutely owned it. I was standing there in awe. I was like, that's cool. That's cool. I love that about the boxing game because obviously in the NRL, which is where most of my background's from, you're not allowed to talk. You know, you can't talk yourself up. You can't have that flashiness. You get chopped down straight away. Yeah. People hate it. But in boxing, it's encouraged. And it's a moment where you sort of sit there in awe. And I love watching people talk shit. And then they've got to get in the ring and back it up. And I don't think he was going to be able to back it up against him. But, man, he was a pleasure to watch while he was there. And then now... now, like you say, a win against Fundora, it might not carry the same weight that it would have in cleaning up Thurman, who's a former unified champion, a legend in boxing already. He's achieved a lot in boxing. Fundora has also achieved a lot, but he hasn't been to that point where he's established his name across the US as one of the big guys, even though he is in that top three in the division. You know, you look at Charlo, you look at Tim, you look at Fundora. They're the guys that are the names in the division.
Yeah. The fight game. Growing up, did you ever think you'd be a... Because, I think when you say the fight game to the wider audience, it's a vague concept. You kind of, the fight game, is it like any other sport? It's actually not like any other sport, the fight game. Very unique world, boxing, combat sport. First of all, tell us, did you ever think you'd be here? But second of all, what is a unique part of the fight game that's different to other sports?
I think there's a number of things. I think the entertainment factor comes in so much. So don't get me wrong, these athletes are some of the greatest athletes in sport. And the discipline required, the levels that they push their bodies to is amazing. But what you do in the ring is 50% of the job. 50% of it is also entertainment.
Yeah.
And I relate to that so much. You know, I watched WWE as a kid. I loved the theatrics. Even as a player, I loved being able to embrace the crowd and everything else that
Are you a Stone Cold man or the Rock man?
Oh, man, you can't split them, can you?
I'm Stone Cold all the way.
I love Stone Cold.
The glass smashes.
Yeah.
And
that's what I love about a walkout, you know, like that glass smashing, and then he just comes storming through. Fucking throwing up his fingers. It's the best. It's the best. And that's what I love about the theatrics of it. And that's what I like, you know, trying to push into boxing as well. Like watching boxing as a kid, I remember Prince Nazim, you know, he'd come out and he'd have these crazy walkouts. All of these big walkouts, you know, even the boxing movies are amazing. You know, Rocky, Apollo Creed, all of the cool shit that you can do in boxing. The theatrics of it is I love it. I love that side of it.
Man, I'll never forget Floyd Mayweather walking out with a Mexican hat backwards against, was it Oscar De La Hoya?
Yeah,
it was Oscar De La Hoya walked out with that.
And that was a huge fight. That was huge.
The disrespect.
Yeah. It was huge.
So good.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, that side of it, it's nuts. And all of it's mental as well, you know. Like Floyd doing that, that's mental. He's getting the crowd involved. He's getting the opponent offside.
Yeah.
And I mean, the amount of shit that you can actually talk in the lead up to a fight, you know, it can get into people's heads.
Yeah.
It can get into it. And you get to push the boundaries as far as you actually want, which, you know, again, you don't get that in every sport. If you're talking like that about another team or another opponent in any other sport, you'd be sanctioned. You'd be sat down. You'd be ta-ta.
Even from your own team, you'd be sat down.
Absolutely.
From, you know, the governing body, you'd be sat down. From the opposing team, you'd probably get a call from a few of the boys, like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah. The boys would be benching you. You'd be benched.
You'd come out with some peroxide hair. You'd have to roll the dice or something like that. You'd do something silly. Mate, speaking of footy to boxing promoter, Walkers, you know, what I am just love watching the journey because I obviously not around you, but I was there when the beginnings of No Limit started and just seeing where it has come. Like the fact that you guys are helping promote the first ever Amazon card with PBC and obviously exclusive on KO here in Australian main event. Like that's to see that journey over the last 5 or 6 years is incredible. How did it come about, No Limit Boxing?
Yeah, look, I mean, 2013 was our first show. Dubbo RSL was our first show that we ever did, and You know, we were helping out some mates at the time to get them a fight, and the show actually went really good. It done really well, and you know, we moved on up to the Orange RSL, I think it was, or the X Services Club.
So the first
club
one was just to help a mate out get a fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard. Like, the fight game is really hard, and here in Australia particularly, it's hard to get guys fights, and you know, unless you've got a promotional deal, or even in your weight, sometimes it's hard to actually match the fights, and I feel like that's one thing that we've been able to excel at and really get good at this point now, is that I think we match really good fights. We create really good opportunities for guys, and there was sort of an era where, you know, 50-50 fights didn't exist. You know, a lot of guys were just taking fights and building their records, and then when they come to the point where they've got to take a real fight, you know, they're straight in the deep water and they don't know how to swim.
Yep.
And so what we do differently is that we're taking hard fights to build our guys, and so that when the point comes, when they do have to take that harder fight, when they do have to step up to a regional level or to a overseas fight, they're ready. They've experienced everything. They've had hard fights. They've experienced vocal crowds. They've experienced the lights, the media, the interviews from, you know, all different aspects of media, mainstream, podcasts, social, everything. They've experienced the highs and lows of that already, so that when they come into it and the attention's on them, they're not overawed by it. And it is more of a level playing field when they've got to step up.
Now, it's like any business journey, you know, for the general public, they've seen the last 5-6 years and they've gone, wow, you just sprung up out of nowhere. This is incredible. But you look at the 5 years before that, what was that first 5 years like? And I guess, was it financially tough? Did you think it was going to work, not work, all that kind of stuff?
All of the above, all of the above. And we're at a point where we were small-time players. We were small-time players in the game. There was already big guys that were doing a lot of shows, you know, that were making big money. And we weren't coming in with money. We weren't coming in with experience. All we did, we came in with a work ethic and a dream of making boxing better, and putting on a better show and making the experience better, and so for that, kicking down doors, you know, copping no's, financial hardship, all of it, we faced it all, but we just kept pushing forward. We kept pushing forward. We supported each other, and I think one thing that we did well is, like I said, that whole entertainment side of it, we try to make it a total package, so that if you're coming to our fight night, if I'm not having a good time at my fight night, I don't feel like you are.
Yeah.
So if I turn up there to my fight night and I think, fuck, this is shit, this is boring, you know, there's no music, you know, there's no action, you know, I'd hate it and I'd expect you to hate it too. So if I'm enjoying it, you know, I feel like there's more chance that a lot more people will enjoy it too. So that's what we make it, a not just a night of fights. We have plenty of entertainment. You know, we want you to be dancing and enjoying the time, and we want the fights to keep rolling out regular, so that before you know it, you know, you've had a little bit of a dance, you've interacted a bit with the crowd, and then before you know it, these guys are walking out again, and we've got another 50-50 fight for you to sit there and go, well, who the hell's going to win this?
Yeah.
You know, and we want that. We want that to be the experience, that you go there for the entertainment of it. And we've built on that. And I feel like we've got a really good team, a really good formula happening now. And we've also got some great fighters on the roster. Yeah. We've got so many good fighters, guys who want to test themselves every time too. And, you know, that's a dream for me. For me to have a guy who says anyone, anywhere, anytime, it's like, great. Yeah. Now all we've got to worry about who's going to get in the ring with you.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something to work with as well. Very Absolutely. Tough to work with a fighter that's kind of umming and ahhing and this direction, that direction. Mate, I like the No Limit cards. They, in Australia, with the ones that I've been with, they really are on another level. And the smooth, like, and what's really good about them is, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the lighting, it's the music, it's, I don't know what it is, but even, like, I brought my wife, who has, you know, nothing about boxing, literally nothing. Every time she goes, she loves it. She absolutely loves it. So it's a great experience. Okay, so those first 5 years, was there ever a time where you thought you were done?
Fuck yeah.
What, can you walk us through just one time that you thought you were just like, it's over?
No, there was, like, we've had tough conversations. So I'm in the business with my two brothers, and there's good sides and bad sides to that.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is that, I mean, a lot of people say don't mix family and business, but for us, there's no other way we do it. Like, yeah. we are just too close, too loyal.
Yeah.
We'd have to do it that way. But it also means we can have tough conversations. And yeah. there's been a few times where we've sat down and gone, like, you know, what the fuck is going on? This is hard, you know, like everybody was against us, everybody was blocking us.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying everything that we can to do it. We're taking losses, and we just kept pushing forward, and it gets to a point where it's like, well, you know, like, why are we doing this? You know, is this the right thing? And we had them conversations. Mm. But every time we got it off our chest, and then, you know, we'd sit there and we'd talk about, you know, all right, what's the solution? What can we do? What can we do different? What's not working? And I think it's just us in business though too, like in general. You know, I played rugby league professionally from the moment I finished high school. Yes, I did my studies and that, but it's not the same as having real life experience and so many hard lessons that we had to have. Mm. Where now I sit here and I think back and I think, if we knew this back then, we're not in that situation that we're in, where, you know, we lost a lot of money on something that we did wrong at the time. We shouldn't have done it, but we learnt from it and we'll never do it again.
Yeah.
But, and even, you know, even our processes of doing things, like you meet new people along the way and you meet someone randomly and suddenly it completely changes the way you operate.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, they've been absolutely life changing. But as far as having my brothers as my business partners, it's lucky that we do that, because there's been times where we've stood there, we're about to go toe to toe over things, because we're so passionate about what we do.
Yeah.
And we'll clash, and it's like, I'm not backing down, you know, and he's not backing down either. And I mean, there's literally been times where me and Matt ended up on the road, and it's like, fuck you, I'm doing, you know, and he was the same, and we weren't backing down, but we were so stressed, it was hard, and we weren't going to back down.
Yeah.
And we're in a time where we're under a lot of pressure at the time, and we were just ready to settle it there on the road, and we didn't come to blows, because I would have touched him up if we did. I would have absolutely touched him up. But he, you know,
no,
and you know then
what? No limit. There is a promotion that could put that fight on.
But again, like half a day later, we stayed clear of each other. Yeah. Half day later, you know, we're back, straight back on the tour, straight back into
being
into
brothers,
work.
You just know.
And then you know, kids from home, and it was like, you know, you're good. You need a hand. It's like, no, I'm good. Yeah, all right, sweet. Little handshake, and it's like, you know, it's over. That's solved. Sure. That was the big. But you know, you probably can't have. I couldn't do that if I wasn't in business with my. I couldn't have that same sort of argument.
HR nightmare
with just a yeah.
Georgie
yeah.
Rose has called me out to the car park.
Yeah, we've got to go to HR. We sit in HR. I'm the HR guy, so George is in the right. We're sweet.
Yeah. Mate. Like it. You know, it's the same with my brother. Where, you know, he owns part of Bloke as well. And I think unless you've owned a business, it's with your family, the immense pressure it puts on everything. It'll test whether you really are, you know, blood is thicker than water kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But if you're close, like I think the idea of like never go in business with family, I'm sure for most cases that's not the case. But if you are like super, like unbelievably tight, I always think it like this. Would you be willing to walk away from everything to keep the relationship together? If both of you are, then it's going to work, because you're willing to put everything aside to go, okay, let's just sort this out. It doesn't matter who's right or whatever. And that's been the experience with my brother. I couldn't think of being in business with anyone else. I'd have to be in business with him.
And it's a motivator too. Like sometimes when I feel like I could let myself down and I could quit, I won't quit, because I don't want to let him down.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to let him down, you know. They mean more to me than myself. So, you know, I would never walk away from it or never – I always want to achieve better because I want to do it for them.
Mm. I remember probably one of the toughest phone calls I had to make, ever had to make with Bloke. So we had the bar – and like I'd taken over to try and like fix things, like, you know, basically a bar that was losing a lot of money and owed a lot of money. And I had come in, didn't own the bar before, but I'd come in to try and help and save whatever. But then my brother was also helping, putting in money to get the beer out there as well at the same time. And I remember having to make the decision of like ringing him and I'm like, listen, we can't, if we brew another batch of beer, we'll probably go bust. And he was like, well, why have I been putting all this money in if we're not going to sell any more beer to stores and that? And I said, like, basically, like, super tough conversation because from his perspective, he's like, well, what's the point of the last year been if you're not going to be selling in stores and you're only going to be selling it at the bar, blah, blah, blah. And it's a super hard conversation. Yeah. You feel like you let them down, but at the same time, you know it's the right call to make. It was a tough comment, but obviously it was the right decision. Thank you very much. But, you know, these are tough conversations that put pressure on the people you love the most.
Yeah.
It's a crazy, crazy ride.
And I couldn't imagine having to have them conversations with someone else, though.
Oh, too, I don't know how you do it.
It's probably lucky that it is family that you're having it with.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can forgive you.
So, okay. When did you feel it swing around? When could you feel that? Was it, you know, prior to Timmy coming on board? Was it, you know, when you started getting a bit involved with, you know, speaking at social media sites? Was it before then? When did it swing for you?
I think the last few years, I think going exclusive was big for us with Foxtel. Prior to that, we'd had Timmy with us for a while. And actually, when we signed Timmy, there was guys that were saying that we were stupid for signing Timmy at the price that we did.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you next is how did that come about? Because the chances of him following his father's footstep are actually really small. Like you'd almost think, would he have the dog in him? Would he be as tough? You know, his father was famous or whatever. Like, it's a big risk in both ways, you know, with him as well. I'm sure he would have had plenty of offers. How did that signing come about?
Yeah, well, other people felt that way too, is that they asked some questions of him. But we met him, we met his team. And it was a bit love hate at first with Glenn. Glenn's such a great operator, his manager.
Yeah.
And you know, him and Matt clashed originally, but it was over the right things. And that's when we knew they were the right team, and we knew that we wanted to take what was seen as a risk at the time. We didn't see it as a risk. We really liked him.
Yeah.
And we thought that there's a lot that we could do with him. And so we beat out everybody else with the offer for Tim, and he signed. And the growth from then has been, you know, we've been growing together. Tim's grown as a fighter. Mm. You know, all the questions that they had about him, now they're the same people that are saying that he's the best thing for Australian boxing. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong. He has been the best thing.
You had promoters literally say to you, this is a stupid idea.
I mean, there were people saying, oh, they're wasting money on it. They're wasting money on it. But I think, you know, at the time we were like, nah, he was someone we genuinely liked him.
Mm.
And that helps. Yeah. I mean, that helps, you know. There's if you've got to put all of your heart and soul into this business, which is what we do, having someone like that you like and you want to see succeed, it really helps in that journey. But we've grown at the same time that Tim has grown, and now, you know, we're doing sellout shows, we're doing co-promotions in America, we're doing you know, we've been doing stadium shows, we've achieved a lot in our short time, particularly over the last few years. I think the Jeff Horn moment was a moment for Tim to take the mantle here in Australia.
Yeah.
And since then, it's been no looking back. So I think that was one of the big moments for us. I actually didn't get to be there for it.
Oh,
I couldn't get into Queensland. Oh. It was at that COVID time. Oh. So Matt and a few of the boys went up early. So they went up like a month early, and it was before everything closed. And then I applied. I couldn't get through it, so I sat in my lounge room watching it, and it was so bittersweet.
Oh.
You know, I was like, yeah, Tim, and I was like, fuck, look at them, they're all enjoying it there, we're not there, you know, I want to be there for the moment.
Oh, man.
So we could see all the boys, they were all crying on TV, and it was a big moment, it was a huge moment.
First of all, you like him as a bloke, so you want him to go well, but I mean, the unique thing about the promotional business is you got to back a horse.
Yeah.
And if the horse goes poor, it's tough.
Yeah, well, every event that we do is a gamble. It is a gamble where, you know, sometimes we're chucking it on a roughie and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
And other times we're backing a favourite and we've got a surefire thing that we know works. And I think that's where we're lucky now, is that, like I said, with the formulas that we have, the team that we have, we've been able to, we know when we've got a good product and when we're going to deliver a really good show. So, you know, sometimes we've got to do extra work to be able to convince people, because not everyone knows about boxing.
Yeah.
Not everyone supports boxing, even though I know it's a great crossover with rugby league and contact sports into boxing. Not everybody gets behind of it. Some people think it's barbaric, but others, I know for a fact that if they watched a few fights, they came to an event, they'd love it.
It's in our blood.
Yeah.
We want to watch people fight.
I've always loved watching a stink, yeah. whether it was at school, whether it was on the footy field, or whether it was a boxing match. I've loved watching a stink. Yeah. I'll run to the window to go and have a look, you know. You hear it, you see security run, you have a look up. Oh, they're into it.
Mate, I'd love to hear like a really in-depth thoughts, because outside of the actual fights and that, it's one of the biggest topics in boxing. Footy players come in. Some people believe that they take away opportunities from actual boxers. Then there's the other line of thought that is like, actually, they bring eyeballs to the sport. What's your thoughts on the whole situation?
So for me, the sport of boxing, you're paid what you earn, what you can bring in. So at the end of the day, a fight's going to make so much revenue, you can only get paid based on that.
Mm.
So if you're a person who's got no one watching you, who's, you know, not selling tickets, who's not getting people to tune in, then it makes it very hard for you to expect a big payday.
Yeah.
You decide your own payday. Jake Paul comes into boxing. He's already got, what, 20 million subscribers on YouTube?
Yeah.
So he's already got a fan base of 20 million people that he can tap into. If, you know, if 10% of those buy pay-per-views, he's killing it.
Yeah.
Absolutely killing it. So, excuse me. It's the same thing with the football players that come in. They've got eyeballs that watch them. People, you know, and don't worry, there's been some dud fights that people don't want to watch. If it's a good fight, people will tune in.
Yeah.
And the fact that the football players already have a name, have a base, people are going to tune in for that. If we can build their fan base off that, Paul Gallen did a great job of it. Timmy Zhu came in on the back of Paul Gallen initially.
Mm.
And other guys have fought off the back of Paul Gallen, Harry Garside, Sam Goodman, and they've been able to build their names off the back of that, not to mention a lot of other guys on the undercard too. So anybody who's associated with the footy players that are coming into it, they're building the revenue pot so that other people can get paid.
Yeah.
And so I see it as a positive thing if there is a result for it at the end of it. Like, end of the day, if someone's going to pay to see something, then that's why they're worth what they're worth.
Yeah, yeah. It's as well, like from a perspective of business-wise, your end goal has to be to help boxers.
Yeah.
Because you have no reliable income by just putting on footy fights.
No.
Because you don't know who's going to fight, who's going to retire. And, you know what I mean? You just have no idea. Whereas like building up boxers is a very, you know, methodical kind of, okay, this guy, we're building his profile. So, I mean, Tim Zhu is just such a good example.
Yeah.
Big name, obviously, himself, and he's earned every single thing he's got. But putting him on some of the footy cards made footy fans go, oh, he's bloody good.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, there's a bunch of footy fans that probably would have never even watched Timmy, but now they're the biggest fan of Timmy Zhu.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, like, I put it this way, I saw the rise of Timmy Zhu much more closely than I did of George Kambosos.
Yep.
And I'm a huge Kambosos fan, but it wasn't as accessible. Now, obviously, Kambosos went on to be incredible, but it just gives you an idea of, you know, when you put it on a card with people with a profile, more people are going to watch him fight.
Yep.
Another really good example is like Sam Goodman gets to headline a card. Obviously, one is his skills, but also look how much hard work he does in that local community in the Gong to have hundreds of Gongians to come out and watch him fight. Like, that's a bloke that realises, like, yeah, I've got incredible skills and, you know, skills pay the bills to a degree, but I still got to do all the work out here of building a base up to get on it, to headline the card.
Yeah, and he gets that, his family gets that, his team gets it, and they do a great job of it. And he's a perfect example of, you know, what you need to do in the fight game. And it's different, again, to other sports in that, you know, you've really got to put in that effort to build your fan base, to build your supporters. And it's hard because... where I feel like in our society a little bit, there's that, you know, free tickets for the for your mates, free tickets for your boys and that, you know. Saying when any time you've got a business, whatever it is, you know, they want a free feed. If you if you're in a restaurant, they come around for a free feed, and it's sort of hard because you want to you need to sell tickets to build your own revenue, to build your own your own base, and people expect free tickets. So if you're a mate of a fighter, buy their tickets and support them, because that's what helps them grow as a fighter. That's a that's the best thing that you could do as a mate is buy a ticket to their fight and get behind them.
Well, that's like, you know, that's what promoters look at, like how many tickets were sold, like how many people watched it. And so if you're actually doing your mate a disservice by asking for a free ticket. I know it's, you know, it's your mate or whatever, but if you're really behind him.
And I've been guilty in the past of asking for free tickets too, so I know how it feels. You know, but I and I love to see that growth of Sam Goodman in Wollongong. You know, I want him to own Wollongong so that, you know, he can keep going back there, more Wollongong people can get behind him and more kids get into the fight game because they see what he's doing down there.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it was such a great night the other night. Now, in regards to, you know, you've still got a long way to go, and I'm sure you wake up every morning going, oh, putting out fires, and, you know, it's not all sorted. But you are one of the bigger Australian promoters. And so you've seen when you're the little dog and the big dogs are just treating you like absolute garbage. Now you're the big dog, everyone wants to take shots at you. And I'm sure there are some that don't. What's that experience been like with other promotion companies and, you know, being the going from the little guy to the biggish guy?
Yeah, look, it's funny, like, because people, you know, they wonder about our rise, you know, like the fact that we are at the top. We do have exclusivity with Foxtel. A lot of people have taken shots at us about that, but at the end of the day, everybody's had that opportunity in that past. Mm. You know, they've all had the opportunity. They could have made it great, and that's what we're doing at the moment, is that we've worked our way into a position where we put on the best shows and we put on the best fights. Mm. And that's why we've got exclusivity, and that's why we're in the position that we are, and that's why we won't lose it, because we'll keep doing what we do, you know. Mm. Like, maybe we will lose it in the future, who knows? I won't claim that, but the thing is that it won't be on the back of our efforts. We'll make sure that we keep, like, every show that we do, whether it's a big one, whether it's a small studio fight, we put in every effort into it to make sure that it's the best version that we can possibly do. And I want fighters to be walking away saying that was the best experience that I've had with a promotion. I want officials walking away saying that was, you know, the best experience that we had with a promotion. You know, I really want people to have that feeling. And I also want the viewers and everybody else who's a part of it, I want them to walk away with that feeling, because the rise that we've had, I mean, like, last year we were named as one of the WBO's top 10 promoters in the world, and I'm like, this is nuts. That's crazy. You know, like, that's the world. And we've been, so the shows that we've been putting all this effort into, it's been seen around the world. And we're lucky enough that Tim headlined 3 times on Showtime last year. And, you know, his show's always a great spectacle. So in the States, they're able to see this. And across the world, they're able to see the amount of effort that we're putting into the shows. And, you know, it does put our name on the lips of some of the global promoters. And, you know, some of them are really interesting characters. And, yeah, there's been some good experiences there.
What's been the biggest pinch me moment where you've gone, is this, are you serious? Like, I'm just a young fella from Australia, from New South Wales.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's been a few wild experiences over the last few years. The last year, the Spence Crawford fight, we decided in 2 days that we were going to go over for the fight.
Yeah.
The timing was so difficult, and then the window opened up and we're like, this could be the fight of the decade, you know. Like, it's that matchup, it's a fight that doesn't happen. Yeah. And the fact that it was on, we were able to lock in tickets and get over there, you know, within 24 hours. And so we rolled up, we land just in time for the weigh-in. I missed the weigh-in, actually. I took the bags to the hotel. The boys got to go and watch the weigh-in. Next day, fight comes around. We go to our seats. We sit down, and it's like, oh, mad. You know, Badu Jack's sitting behind us. Yep. Oh, that's cool. You know, we've got Andre from Outkast is sitting back behind us. Marlon Wayans is sitting back behind us.
No way.
And so I'm here. Matt's there. Trent's here. And then I think we're at the co-main event, and Mike Tyson walks in. And he sits down next to Trent. That was his seat. His seat was his seat. Yeah. So we're sitting here ringside watching the fight. Mike Tyson's sitting here next to Trent, and we're like, "Holy shit!" You know, like this is like cool.
He's
and
just
it,
there.
It was like, we're like, I was tapping Matt. I was like, you know, look. And like, what are we asking for a photo or what? We're asking for a photo, and then turned to just about to ask him, and this other bloke's come across. He's like, "Oh, hey Mike, can I get a photo with you?" He's like, "I'm watching the fucking fight. Get the fuck out of my face. I'm watching this fight. Oh, get away." And I was just like, I looked and I grabbed Trent. I said, don't ask him. So we just sat there still. So Trent sat next to Mike Tyson for the Errol Spence, Terence Crawford fight. He sat next to him the whole time. We did not ask him for a photo. We barely talked to him the whole time he was there because when he sat down, man, I could feel it in his voice. I was like, man, he's the baddest man on the planet. I'm not. Forget the photo. Let's just hope the camera picked us up or something.
Yeah. Man, like, again, to think of a young fella from New South Wales be sitting next to Mike Tyson at a fight and also be sitting there, you know, through your own work, really, you know, to get those seats and everything like that. So it's not like, you know, you won a ticket or, you know, a meet and greet or something like that. You worked your way to get there.
Yeah, no, look, the experience has been amazing. To be standing in the ring as our fighter steps into the ring in the UK and in Orlando, in all of these different places. Now we're going to do it in Las Vegas in 2 weeks. We'll be standing in the ring for Tim Zhu's unification world title fight, and like a moment like that, it always gets me, actually, even when with our own shows, is the moment when Tim walks out is like, you know, I'm real emotional at the time because all of our work that we've put into it culminates in that moment. You know, once Tim enters the ring, we're sort of passing the torch over. It's like, you know, now
it's your job.
Now you finish it off. I hope you enjoyed the walk in. I hope you enjoyed the crowd.
Yeah.
Now you finish the job off, and so often when he's walking out, because you know I always love his walkouts too. Like the music's perfect for him, and he owns the moment. And you know, I'll be sort of getting a little bit teary here, sitting here while he's walking out, and I'm trying to hide it. And I'll sort of go to look away from the camera, or look away, and I'll see, and then Matt's over here, he's fucking sobbing, and I'm like, yeah. But it's the amount of emotion that you put into it to get to that point. So it's almost like, you know, we've played our game then, and we're walking off the field, and Timmy's walking on as the main event, and then he just finishes the day off perfectly every time.
Yep. Well, I'll be over there with you boys, so I cannot wait. Oh my God, I'm so excited! So excited! Going to be so much content. We'll be interviewing all the four or five fighters, probably more. I mean, you name it, we'll be interviewing over there and creating the content, putting it out on Bloke and obviously KO. Mate, just with your footy career, I'd just love to know what was the peak. First of all, walk us through your debut, and also what was the biggest moment of your footy career, and also how does it compare to being a promoter?
Yeah, right. So I debuted for the Roosters in 2004. Mm. It was off the back of some really good reserve grade form. I was playing good then, and opportunity opened up. I think Jason Kalis was injured at the time. Roosters had a great team, and I got a start against
far out. That would have been grand final. They lost to
Bulldogs. Yes, great team, great squad. And so we played at Newcastle, made my debut at Newcastle, and I think I had something like 60 people had come down, and they had their own little stand over in the corner that they were all on. They made a sign for me and that. It was a huge moment. And I didn't play long, but the biggest hit that I did of the game was standing on the sideline waiting to run on. So Ricky called me up. He said, "Get on there, you know, you're going on. Just, you know, rip in, blah, blah." And I jumped up. I'm standing on the sideline, and the Newcastle trainer was sprinting out. He was running messages. He comes sprinting out. And he's run straight into me. And, like, I didn't even budge at the moment. Like, I was so on.
Yeah.
And he's just run at me, flattened himself on the ground. I looked. He's there was the only shot that I put on all game, but it was a fucking huge shot. And that was it. I got out there, had a couple of runs, you know, got to play in a team with Brad Fittler. Oh. Man, like the people that were on that field, they were people that I'd watched on TV for 10 years. And so it was a really crazy moment for me to get that opportunity. Grateful that I got it. From there, I was at the Seagulls from 06 to 13, and I had, that's probably where most of my great memories were.
Yeah.
While I was there, really loved playing in the Indigenous All-Stars game. Mm. Winning the Preston Campbell Medal in my final year was a huge moment for me then. Mm. And the grand final with the boys at Manly, even, you know, like the, yeah, that was some really good years. We worked hard to get to that. 2008, 40-0 against the Storm. And then 2011, I was able to play in. 2008, I was coming back from injury.
Yep.
2011, we knocked off the Warriors. And so that was a great moment. Really good group of players, really great club. Still talk to a lot of the boys, a lot of the people around the club.
Mm.
Got to catch up with a few of them over in Vegas even. Rossi's still there. He's still kicking. There's still a few guys that are there from the old days. So it's, it's a great club, great memories, and I really enjoyed it. It's obviously very different from what I do now, though. I mean, I think the biggest thing, again, is the media. So, you know, while we were playing footy, we were shit scared of the media and you couldn't say anything. And I still remember the day that I remember when the whole the Asada scandal was around, and even then, like, they're like, don't say nothing, don't talk to anything, if they ask anything about it, don't answer anything.
Yep.
And I got up in the media, because it was my day for it, and the first or second thing they asked me was about that. Well, what are your thoughts on the Asada scandal? Where do you stand on it? And I'm like, well, if there's any any hormones in the KFC chicken, I'm in a bit of trouble, but otherwise I'm all right. I had nothing. I thought, you know, like, you put up this block against the media and they put it straight on you, and the first thing I thought was chicken. The first thing I was thinking, you know, that was when all the yarns were around that the chicken was no good. Yeah, I thought, if anything brings me undone, it's the chicken. But now I've got to lean into the media, and it's funny, because some of the guys that I was so scared of or hated for no reason, they're actually really good blokes, and they're doing a job. And if you're doing the right thing by them, and you're having a good relationship with them, some of them are actually really good blokes.
Yeah. It's like anything, you know. There's stupid footy players, there's stupid journos, but most of the time they're just human beings doing their job most of the time. And also, like, in my experience with most journalists, if you say, can you not put that out?
Yeah.
You tell them that. I haven't had an experience where they've just gone nuts.
Yeah,
Most of them go, yeah, man, all good, all good.
And if you're able to be open, I think, because when you're guarded, you know, you think there's something behind every question as well.
Yeah.
But when you are open and you're able to take it on board, it's different. And I also think that guys like yourself have a lot of credit for that, change over the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, is that you've kicked down a lot of doors and broke them boundaries, and made them have to be a lot more like yourself in how open you are and how good you are at getting a yarn out of people.
Oh, thanks, man. I do appreciate it. Now, are you a Manly? Is Manly your team? When you're watching TV on the weekend, who's your team?
Yeah, look, I'm Manly. I'm Manly 100%. I mean, on the weekend, it was unbelievable. Like, you know, what a feeling. It honestly felt like that golden era of the Eagles.
Ooh, really?
I swear to God, Sunday Arvo as a Brookie, nobody ever wanted to come there. We were smoking you every day of the week. Sunday Arvo at Brookie, you are not gonna beat us. And that's the vibe that I had. Roosters were red hot. Roosters were red hot, but the boys, they knew how to turn on. You've got a job. Sunday Arvo, you've got to put it on for the fans, and I think they did a great job of it.
Yeah, mate, they're looking bloody good. Probably the most impressive, well, definitely the most impressive side over the first two rounds.
Yeah.
Just watching rugby league, obviously boxing is so unique that you would never really, like, there's certain people that get in the ring that you would never suspect have incredible timing and they're just good fighters.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be shocked. Like, and then there's some guys where you're like, he'd be a great fighter. They get in the ring and they just... Yeah. No good. But from your eye, who do you reckon would make a great boxer currently playing in the NRL?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a few people I off. I think Brandon Smith is a smoky.
Okay.
I reckon he's not real tall.
Yep.
He's not real tall, but he's got that mongrel in him. Mm. I think anyone who's got that dog in him, you know, you've got... I reckon that's what it takes. It takes it, because it's more than just, you know, looking pretty. Because when you've got to take a hit and you've got to be able to come back, you know. Yeah. So you think of the guys, you know, maybe like a Cam McInnes. You know, he's
tough.
Yeah,
and also
he's missing a few teeth. So
mate, he's got a noggin for days. He got hit by a front row off a kick return. He was sweet.
He'd get up and just go again. You know, that's what I mean. If you can take a hit and just keep going, I think guys like that. You know, a lot of the, yeah, it can be a pretty sport if you're brilliant at it.
Yeah.
You know, Floyd Mayweather did not get hit, so he was able to be pretty.
Yeah.
But when you're going to take a few hits, you need to be tough.
Well, was it like watching the, you know, Gallen's career after rugby league? Because it, like, I don't think he gets enough appreciation for, because he was always very clear, guys, I'm not a boxer. Yeah. I'm just here playing. I'm a footy player, you know, having a crack at boxing. But I tell you what, like, he went incredible and fought some, like, for example, Justice Hooney.
Yeah.
He fights him. People don't understand. Like, that's an Olympian
heavyweight
with a whole, in his youth, Gal's played his whole career. He's 38 years old. And I know Hooney won that handily, but he was still in the ring with him.
Yeah.
Incredible stuff.
Well, look, Gal said that, you know, like you said, he said that he wasn't a boxer, but he was also one of the top five Australian heavyweights for his entire career, without a doubt. And you ask any of the Australian heavyweights who sparred with him, they know he's the real deal. They knew he was good. And, you know, probably one of the greatest tragedies of Gal's career is that he didn't get the chance to hold that Australian heavyweight title.
Yeah.
Because he deserved it. At points of his boxing career, he was the number one Australian heavyweight. And,
crazy.
He should have held that. But, man, what he was able to do, he's a funny one, because I hated him passionately as a player. But he was the face of the Sharks. And you'd go out there and he was the toughest bastard on the field. You needed four blokes to bring him down. You could dog shot him all you like, and he'd just get up and keep going. And he was one of them guys. So I hated him because of how good he was as a footballer. But then you see what he'd done in the ring. Man, he was as tough as nails, and competitive and aggressive, and challenged himself. Like the Mark Hunt fight. Like, he's one of the greatest knockout artists of the generation. Amazing, right? Gal took one of them hits, and then when he come back and he was landing them uppercuts, like, that was one of my favorite moments, really, of our early promotional. That was the first fight that I officially promoted for No Limits. So I just got my promoter's license, and that was the first one that I did. So out at Bankwest Stadium, Combank Stadium, great crowd. It was nuts. Like, the energy for that fight was nuts. And I think, like, even like those blokes like Dusty Martin sitting ringside, and even he was like in awe of what was happening. You know, I don't know how much he follows the NRL, but what Gal did in that fight, that was unbelievable.
Yeah, mate. So, like, put it this way, I don't think there's anyone tougher that's played the sport of rugby league. There might be people as tough, like, you know, the old school players. I get it, you know, they worked. I totally get all that.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, there can't be many blokes tougher than Gallen to ever play the game. Yeah. Surely.
No, if you're heading into a fight and you got Gallen on your side, you'd be feeling pretty confident. You know, he's not going to quit. He's got no quit in him.
Yeah.
He's as tough as they come,
mate. So March 31st, make sure you buy the fight, guys. This is one of Timmy's biggest tests of his career, to go over there, and the pressure that is going to be on this man is like the weight of a country, but also the weight of a brand new player in the fight game.
Yep.
There is so much to lose for Timmy, but also a huge challenge ahead.
Yeah, he's opening Amazon Prime. Like, it's amazing. It's the biggest new boxing broadcast deal in the world, and he's opening it. He's the headliner, and now he's got to fight the boogeyman who you need 12 weeks. You need 12 months to prepare for this bloke.
Yeah.
And Timmy's doing it in 12 days.
So good. So good. So make sure to grab the fight. It'll be on K. You don't need a subscription. It's also on Main Event. Thanks so much for joining us, big fella. Appreciate it. And also, just so you know this, I have been anointed the fourth adopted Rose brother when I'm at fights.
Den and Rose.
I'm the adopted brother. That's just, when you see me on camera, I'm officially an adopted brother of the Rose. Just so you know.
I love it.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.